scores! And the Ballers win! Helena is no longer undefeated!
I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
Barons win! Barons win!
Cody Jansen stopped 92 out of 95 shots, including a penalty shot in overtime. Somehow he still only wound up the third star of the game.
You like that?
Jansen has a heart.
You're smoking crack!
Let's get it going. Olympic hockey starts today. Canada, Switzerland, Czechia, China. It's the Olympic tournament. We're going to break it all down for you on World Hockey Report. It's Cody Jansen coming to you live on 12 Ounce Sports and the Hockey Podcast Network today. Be sure to join the conversation right now. 12 Ounce Sports, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, wherever you are watching from. If you got questions, get them in the chat right now. NHL, international hockey, anything. We're going to be going through it all. Cody Jansen coming to you live from the ProHawk Broadcast Studios in beautiful Alberta today. I got to fix the lighting. I don't know how. I mean, it's unbelievable. I'm getting blinded right now, and I just turned my ring light off too. So it is absolutely cold outside. It's like minus 45 out there, but we're surviving. We're staying warm inside the studio here. Lots to talk about as well. The Oilers Capitals tonight. Tyson Barrie makes his return. Noah Ovechkin back on the COVID list. Is he trying to skip out of the All-Star game? I don't know. I want you to tell me. Let me know. We're on Twitter as well at World Hockey RPT. You can follow us on social media there. I'm at Janner31_. Don't forget, use promo code THPN on DraftKings. Thanks to our friends at the Hockey Podcast Network. They are going to hook you up. The big story, though, Canada, Switzerland. That's coming up. We'll dive into a little bit more of Team Canada later on in the show. We'll preview it with Ron Black at 12:45 Alberta time. And we do have the Oilers and Capitals tonight. Mikko Koskinen, huge story this season. I'm really curious to talk to him and ask about not just the goal in overtime by Stützle, but, you know, is there something that NHL goalie coaches can do to work with Koskinen on some of those tendencies that are getting out of hand? Not just allowing the first goal, but how it's going in. I don't know. We'll get the expert on. Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine will join us at, let's say in about 10 minutes or so. Oilers Capitals, Tyson Barrie does return. Quickly, I will go over the lines for you. I'll rip through those quite quick. And it's interesting to see Nugent Hopkins still playing on the third line, but here's how they look. First line, Kane, McDavid, Yamamoto. Second line, McLeod, Draisaitl, Poole, Järvi. So McLeod has spent some time at center. They're going to say, hey, here's a top six opportunity, but you got to play on the left wing where, you know, normally you might think Hyman or Nugent Hopkins would be. Your third line is Hyman, Nugent Hopkins, and Derek Ryan on the right side. Then it's Fogle, Shore, Cassian. Defense, Nurse, Bouchard are paired together. Keith and CeCe again. And Lagesson and Barrie. Starting goaltender Mikko Koskinen, Skinner backs up. So one of the things I don't like so far about just looking at this lineup on defense especially is just the consistency. I hate when they switch pairs. And for Dave Tippett, you want to build this chemistry. You're almost halfway, if not halfway through the season right now. No, they're definitely more than halfway through the season. I mean, I can do some simple math in my head, Cody. But, and we're not building this chemistry of pairings that need to play together. And I know you got to be flexible. I know COVID injuries, all that happen. But I think at this point, I would prefer to see, you know, Dave Tippett kind of set something and stick with it. Say, hey, this is how it's going to be for this season. Make it work. If it's Keith and CeCe, put them together. If you want Keith playing with Bouchard, stick with it. That's all I ask. Again, join the conversation anytime at 12 Ounce Sports. You got a question, let us know. Also, one of the questions we did put out on Twitter, and it's, you know, it's a Canadian bias. Let's you know, not sugarcoat anything. Which Olympics do you think was better, 2002? This is just for hockey, or 2010? So 2010 probably had the more exciting finish. Obviously, the golden goal, Canada, you know, they both, men's and women's, win. But 2002, I feel that round robin was elite. Like, Canada ends up tying the Czech Republic. You know, they lose to Sweden. They get smacked by Sweden in their round robin opener. And they barely beat Germany. I think it was a one-goal game. And, you know, you come through, you beat Finland in the quarters, you beat Belarus in the semis. I know after they knocked off Sweden. I think the 2002 Olympics for men's hockey and women's hockey were, you know, Canada was looking for a little bit of revenge too. Gina Heffer had that big goal. I think 2002 is superior. Again, you can let us know on Twitter at any time. Also, it has been leaked. I guess it's not official. We won't call it official until it's actually, you know, announced by the league. But it seems like the next outdoor game, it's going to be at Fenway. It's a winter classic between the Boston Bruins and the Pittsburgh Penguins. We asked if it excited anyone. I would go through your answers, but we would be here all night. There's hundreds of them. And for the most part, people are saying no. We need new teams. So let me pose you this, and you can join the conversation on 12 Ounce Sports. Who do you want to see? What two teams and where do you want to see in an NHL Winter Classic, Heritage Classic? I don't even get the difference anymore. They're just outdoor games. So which two NHL teams do you want to see in an outdoor game and where? Let me know. It's Cody James and World Hockey Report coming to you live from the Pro Rock Broadcast Studios today. Let's get to Canada-Switzerland. We'll tee up this game quickly before we got to throw it off to break for Kevin Woodley. Canada-Switzerland, this one gets underway at 9:10. Precisely-ish, I guess, Alberta time. So Canada, the 13-0 all the time against Switzerland. Marie-Philippe Poulin, obviously the leading scorer against Switzerland all the time. No surprise there. 9 games played against them. She's got 7-7 for 14 points. Both goalies, this was an interesting one. And I will talk about the goaltending here because Emerence Maschmeyer and Anne-Renée Desbiens are the two, you know, they're likely going to start. And both of them have only played Switzerland once in meaningful competition, and they both have shutouts against Switzerland. So I think that's a pretty safe bet right there. We will go over, you know, the top 25 list that TSN put out today. Can't say I agree with that one. For Marie-Philippe Poulin and Rebecca Johnson, it's both their fourth Olympics on that roster. And I'll get to the goaltending because from a starter's perspective, I think it's obvious who I would rather have between the pipes. And I mean, we've been vocal about it before, but Emerence Maschmeyer, she's got a .936 save percentage all time, 28 games played for Team Canada. Yes, she's 14-9. It's not like she's got the best record, but she's also played in some of the most difficult games. She's played against the best American teams of all time. She's got 7 shutouts in those contests. I mean, I just think that although Desbiens is an awesome goaltender, although she won you, you know, gold at the Worlds, I still think Maschmeyer could be the better choice. Maybe it's not the more comfortable choice. Maybe it's a little bit riskier. But we all know America's going to be coming out. The Americans are going to be coming out flying. They got a little extra piss in their step right now. And I mean, they're just mad. They're mad that they lost gold. They're unhappy with how it happened in Calgary. And you know that they're going to be coming out. The piss and vinegar is ready to roll. Okay, so TSN did come out with their top 25 as well. And so a couple of players to watch. Well, I guess we'll give you the top 5 first right away. No surprise, MPP is number 1. Melody Daou, she's number 2. Hirakoski out of Finland, the D-man, eats crazy minutes. I mean, she's 34 years old, and I think at World, she's playing almost 27 minutes a game. They've got her at number 3, and I think this was a little bit of a jab at the Americans. I think this was a little bit of, you know, poking the bear one more time, because Brianna Decker at number 4 and Hillary Knight at number 5. Come on. Hillary Knight, the 5th best player in the world? I don't know. I don't agree with that. Maybe you do. Interestingly enough, though, from Switzerland, Alina Mueller is at number 6 here. 2021 Worlds got cut short. She had an ankle injury. You know, one of the youngest players, she's 23 years old here. 29 points in 16 games with Northeastern this season. Number 6 seems like a very high ranking. I guess we're going to find out tonight. And Laura Stadler. Of course, she's played for Switzerland for, you know, the past 9 years, probably. You know, she's obviously got a reputation, probably one of their best forwards. She's comes in at number 18. An issue I had was Elena Mills. I mean, friend of the show, obviously, but let's be real. Her at number 23 is insane. I mean, she's a goal-a-game player in Russia. She rips up Sweden, Finland, wherever she goes. And the only reason I say she's at 23 is because she plays on Czechia. I mean, if she plays on another country, any other country, I kid you not, you put her on Finland, USA, or Canada, she's a top five player. Top five goal scorer. She's got unbelievable skill with the best. She's got one of the best shots in all of women's hockey. And to have her at number 23, maybe it's back to the scouting book. We won't dive too far into that. Speaking of number ones, though, Chris Peters had an interesting article for Daily Faceoff, obviously stirring up a lot of drama, but he's got Logan Cooley as his number one prospect coming into the upcoming NHL draft in 2022 here. Logan Cooley or Shane Wright? Who would you rather have? Let us know in the conversation anytime at 12 Ounce Sports, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Alrighty, Oilers, Capitals tonight. We got a lot to talk about goaltending-wise. There's been a lot going on. Like, we just got to see Saros up here in Edmonton. Lundqvist retired. Markstrom's having a pretty damn good year. Shesterkin's been phenomenal. I got a million questions, and we all got to talk about Mikko Koskinen, right, Oilers fans? We got to get the expert's insight. So we will do that with In Goal Magazine's Kevin Woodley when we come back. It's Cody Jansen, World Hockey Report. We are presented by Pro Rock Hockey Sticks, and we'll talk to you in a minute. The moment we've all been waiting for since September is finally here. In honor of the big game, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 56, is giving new customers 56-1 odds on either team. Bet just $5 and win $280 in free bets if your team wins. DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in New York, meaning you can bet from almost a third of the country. If the sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, play DraftKings Daily Fantasy Football Contest for Super Bowl 56. New customers can get a free shot at $1 million in top prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app, use promo code THPN, and get 56-1 odds on either team. Bet just $5 and get $280 in free bets if your team wins. That's promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 56. 21 plus, minimum age and location requirements vary by jurisdiction. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full list of requirements and state-specific responsible gambling resources. Void where prohibited. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Tennessee, call or text the TN Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. In Connecticut, call 888-789-QUADRUPLE-7 or visit ccpg.org/chat. In New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY.
Take your game to the next level with Pro Rock Hockey Sticks. Pro Rock is changing the way we buy top-of-the-line twigs. They're lightweight, balanced, and provide the perfect kick point, whether you're a pro hockey player or a beer league legend. Pro Rock Hockey Sticks are made for you. They're at a price point you can't beat, so check them out today at ProRock.com. Play like a Pro Rock.
Cody Jansen, World Hockey Report, coming to you live from the Pro Rock Broadcast Studios today. And we had to catch up with our goalie guru, Kevin Woodley, from In Goal Magazine. Kevin, how are you today?
I'm good. Yeah, no, Canucks are on the road. I'm just watching games from home, you know, catching my breath a little bit here before a hectic stretch through February, March, and April. And yeah, life is good. All-star game this weekend. Little break. Yeah, no complaints, man.
Are you going to be watching a lot of Olympic hockey? Does that kind of tickle your fancy or no?
It does, particularly on the women's side, for sure. You know, best in the world, best on best, still on that side, and some incredible goaltenders, incredible players as well. So that definitely catches my interest. On the men's side, it still does. Like, for certain storylines and certain guys that I'm a fan of, especially from the goaltending perspective. Like, I'm really curious to see how Canada goes. I was disappointed to see them not take Devan Dubnyk. Still trying to figure out what the story is there, but I'm excited, especially if they give Devan Levi a chance to run with it, given what he's done in the NCAA, a guy that I've had the pleasure of sort of getting to know a little bit through In Goal Radio podcast and through some work at Hockey Canada. And, you know, a kid that I think is a special person and a special goaltender, has the perfect mindset. So, you know, some of those individual storylines for sure. And obviously, of course, as a Canadian, you're going to want to watch, but let's just say that it gets a little tougher to set the alarm to watch live on some of those games when it's, you know, when it's not necessarily, not to diminish it in any way, but when it's not, you know, the best on best we'd hoped for.
No, that doesn't diminish it at all. That's just being honest, Kevin. I think everyone kind of agrees. You know, I'll wake up at 2 a.m. if I get to watch McDavid and Crosby take on Ovechkin and Kuznetsov or whoever. But again, if it's Canada versus China at 3 a.m, sorry, I'm watching the replay like the next day. You know, it's just, it's not going to happen. That's honest. But again, it's nice. I appreciate you giving the women a shout out too. I'm excited for that. Starts tonight, Canada versus Switzerland. World Hockey Report, of course, we'll have coverage on Twitter at World Hockey RPT. But we got to talk NHL goaltenders, Kevin. And, you know, up in Edmonton, the big story, obviously, Mikko Koskinen. And I've got multiple thoughts on this, but I'm really curious to hear from your perspective, just how you would evaluate his season so far. Again, this isn't a guy who should or is expected to be a number one in the NHL, but he's playing those minutes. So I want you to evaluate how you see his performance or how it's been this season.
I think, like a lot of guys, like, there's always going to be ups and downs. I give him credit for coming out of a pretty prolonged down with some strong performances lately. But at the end of the day, you know, when you evaluate it overall, whether it's, you know, eye test or statistically, you know, it hasn't been quite good enough. And I agree that, you know, too much has been asked at times. Like, we sort of know at this point, don't we, what Mikko Koskinen is and what he isn't. And he's a guy who can give you some really good minutes in a 1B backup role. But when you ask for too much, when you ask him to be a number one, there's a tendency, especially over time, to maybe come up short. We've seen, and I've talked about, the low percentage goals being a problem for him this year. Again, in the last couple of weeks, he's cut them out a little bit. But those are, you know, those are the killers. Like, last I checked, he led the league in low percentage goals with 16. And so, they are the kind that deflate the confidence of not only a fan base, but probably, if we're honest, of a locker room and a bench. Your team loses 87% of the games where your goalie gives up a low percentage goal, unless the other guy reciprocates and gives one up himself. Like, that, those are just the raw numbers. I think we all know what some of those goals look like on the eye test, the pucks that leak through him as a big body, you know, the sharp angle stuff, that gets people irked. But again, like, you just, they're just, I think they've just asked too much, right? Like, this is not fair to expect, you know, 1A performances out of a guy who's never been or professed to be a 1A. So, you know, statistically he's below expected on the season, but he's still showing, when you can keep him rested, that he's capable of giving you good goaltending. The problem I see for the Oilers is that, especially when the numbers I look at come playoff time, the ones that matter, is they're built to sort of require great goaltending to have a chance once we get to the postseason. Like, they're a middling defensive team. It's the elite defensive 5-on-5 teams that for the past 3 years have had success in the playoffs. They're not that. I'm not suggesting they even become that, because their strength is up front and their strength is attacking. And with that comes chances the other way. And so, to me, they're better off in a way trading chances. I think we saw for the first 2 weeks in January, they tried to batten down the hatches, and the numbers bore that out. Like, they were really good defensively, and it didn't matter because all it did was stifle them offensively. Like, as their 5-on-5 high danger defense entered elite levels, their 5-on-5 high danger offense disappeared. And so I think they're better off to be a team that's trying to create four goals, four and maybe giving up 2.5 against than a team that's trying to keep the against, you know, chance wise down to 1.5 or 2 and only generating 2. So, you know, that didn't really work for them. It didn't work for Mikko because there were still goals going in. You're just better to play a little more fire wagon hockey. But the problem is that almost never equates in the playoffs. And so what's your answer? Well, you can't change what you are as a team at this point, the way the roster is constructed. You know, there are a handful of guys that have proven capable of backstopping those type of defensive teams in the postseason, but it's a pretty damn short list of guys that are able to carry that type of play forward once we hit the playoffs.
Well, you just summed up the Oilers season right there, Kevin. So I don't know if we really need to go much further on that. No, I just want to ask about the overtime goal of that Stutzla score. I'm sure you saw the video of it. Koskinen gets beat short-sided high in overtime. He used an RVH there. And I mean, you know, it's a little bit technical for the goalie talk here. So if you're not a goalie, I apologize. But I want to know your thoughts on it, if that's kind of a spot where Koskinen has been exposed as a 6'7" goaltender who plays a little bit small at times. Is that something you see as well? Like, is that an adequate breakdown of why Tim Stützle was able to score that goal? And yes, it was a good shot, but there was also a lot of extra room there. It wasn't like he was putting it by, you know, a 1x3-inch slot.
Yeah, no, like, okay, so, I mean, I don't know that we need to explain what RVH is because every Edmonton Oilers fan that's listening saw the goal, right? Like, because it's been picked apart like crazy. So that is essentially an RVH, what Mikko did on that play. And I think it's a save selection that you would typically make on sharp angle plays. My preference, I think, would be on plays coming from low to high as opposed to rush chances. And that was more of a, you know, high to low, like coming downhill chance for Stützle. But as Stützle kind of comes towards the net, he actually gets below the bottom of the faceoff circle, which is a zone where that save selection isn't terrible. Like, that's not the end of the world. That might be a save selection that a lot of goalies, you know, make in that spot. And, you know, including some guys that we would classify as the best in the world. Like, as that puck gets down below the bottom of the faceoff circle, a lot of guys will tell you RVH is their play and they have success with it. The problem was sort of twofold. One, I think Mikko was gassed at the end of overtime. Two, Stützle has enough time. If you watch it, like, he gets below or right to the bottom of the faceoff circle. But I don't know if this is recognition on his part that Mikko's gone into RVH or just the amount of time and space he has. He toe drags that thing back up higher in the zone, closer to the net. And with no pressure on him, he's watching Mikko the whole way as he does it. And he essentially changes his angle and takes what for a half second looked like it was going to be a sharp angle attack and pulls it into a better shooting angle where you probably don't want to be in an RVH. And so, you know, is that fatigue at the end of overtime, an overtime in which Mikko made a couple of game savers already? Is that, you know, just a poor read on his part, expecting Stützle to stay below the goal line or maybe even attack from a sharp angle or maybe even come on net from a sharp angle and go around behind and a wrap? You know, 3-on-3 is a different animal. So probably not the right save selection, obviously not the right save selection in terms of how it worked out, but there was a moment there where, you know, as Stützle's attacking, it's like, okay, this is RVH time. And I just wonder if it's 6'7" or that time of the game and that fatigue, he doesn't ever get up and out of it. And to be honest, as Stützle pulls it across and has his head up the whole way, as a goalie, that transition period can become quite costly. So if you decide, oh crap, he's not sharp angle anymore, I need to get out of this, like, the process of getting up and out of RVH is going to open so many holes and expose so many holes. And again, Stützle, there's no pressure on him. Nobody has defensive pressure. Nobody's anywhere near him. He's got time. And, you know, as a goalie, sometimes staying home and making him beat you with a pretty high-end shot is better than trying to get up at that point and opening holes and having him sift one through you, which has been an issue for Mikko and is an issue for big goaltenders in general. Like, you get caught moving, the bigger you are, the bigger the holes. So I'm not as critical on that one as a lot of people have been. Not saying I loved it, but I just think there's reasons that when you break it down to understand why he went the way he did. Now, a lot of people will say, where Stützle was, you know, maybe you don't need to go into RVH. You can hold your edges at that point. And again, I wonder if that's a read or fatigue or, you know, what plays into that. And only Mikko can answer it. So there's one thing I've learned through InGoal. It's we do pro reads every week where we sit down with an NHL goaltender and walk through saves and save selections. And they basically explain what they're seeing on a play and why they play it the way they do. And it's designed to help kids improve how they read the game by showing it through the eyes of an NHL goaltender. It's been one of our most popular features at InGoal Magazine, or InGoalMag.com. But the thing I've learned the most about it is, like, unless, as much as we all want to criticize goaltending decisions and things like that, until you've heard the goalie break it down and what his read was, it's probably unfair because we don't know. And the other thing that we've done 2 years of them now, so it's like over 100 of them online. And the amount of times that read is based on the defense, the structure, and trusting it to do what it's supposed to do has really been eye-opening for me. And so until we hear, you know, 3-on-3 is a different animal, but quite often in that case, you're doing that because you're expecting someone to force that play to stay below the bottom of the circles. You're not expecting a guy to have the time and space to cut back up above. And sometimes that's, you know, that can be a mistake by the defense, but sometimes that system, and sometimes the goalie is the only one who ends up in the spotlight, but the mistake might be elsewhere. So I'm not letting him off the hook entirely, but I think it's probably not as black and white as a lot of people have made that goal out to be.
Full breakdown right there from Kevin Woodley, our guest from InGoal Magazine. It's Cody Jansen with you on World Hockey Report. Now, Kevin, I've got an interesting question. Actually, my thoughts quickly on that Koskinen goal. You hit the nail on the head with the RVH, and maybe fatigue played a little bit more of a factor, but it felt like a laid-back RVH, where if you watch Andrei Vasilevsky, who's, of course, world elite, when he goes into the RVH, he's still sitting very tall. He's still taking away a little bit more of the net, where Koskinen was definitely slouched over, and you could probably, you know, tag fatigue on that like you did. But I want to ask something, and this maybe, you know, it's a, I don't know, hindsight's 20/20 or whatever. But if you throw in a Mitch Korn into the goaltending mix in Edmonton versus a Dusty Schwartz, and this isn't a shot at Schwartz by any means, but do you think that there's some holes in Koskinen's game that could be worked on and just haven't been fixed? Or do you think those are just unfixable, like the low percentage chances that are going in? You know, there was a stretch or so where, you know, it was a game-by-game basis. I think over 8 games, he allowed 2 goals glove side high from outside of 20 feet or something like that, you know, where it's consistently similar goals going in on Koskinen. How much do you think a goalie coach can affect the way, you know, a goaltender at the NHL level changes his game?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain things you just can't, you know, I mean, there's limitations, right? Like, you know, sometimes they're between the ears as well. Like some of the goals that sort of go through, like they just shouldn't. Some of them are, you know, the size of the frame. You know, I know they've like Mikko's post play, as much as we want to pick apart the RVH on the OT, if you watch his post play over the past couple of years, it's actually improved significantly. Like it's a bit of a gong show there coming in, and it's actually improved quite a bit in terms of his ability to get in and off them. And the one thing about being 6'7" and sort of playing with the butterfly width that he does, like to me, it actually hurts him on post play and sharp angle stuff, because those long legs, like think of sliding into your post with your skate against it or with the toe of the pad against the post, like the longer those legs are, the bigger a gap is created between your torso and that post. So now you've got to lean over top of these really long legs, and it's just hard to seal holes. And so I think there are physical limitations in Mikko's game that, maybe almost because he's so big, like there's just only so much you can do on certain things. Like I'm not sure on the glove side, there was times earlier, like a couple years ago, where the fact he had a tendency to sort of not square up on that side. He had a tendency to sort of almost leave that side behind on some plays or get flat and not stay on angle, created, you know, everybody pointed at the glove, but it was sort of where how he set up that hurt that. And again, I saw improvements there, but you know, whether it's when he plays too much, and this is the thing, like when he has time to work with the goalie coach and stay sharp on those details, he has his best performances. But when you play him too much, it's like, no matter how much they've drilled those details, they start to drift, it seems. And you sort of all of a sudden that backside's being left behind on a push and he's not fully squaring up and that glove isn't as active as it should be. And so again, I don't know what else you do, because when he's playing a lot, because of the managing his rest, you lose that time to manage his game. And that's always the equation that number one goaltenders have to sort of figure out. I talked to UC Saros this week. Like, he's going through it right now. He's playing more than anyone in the league, and it's hard to sort of stay on top of your game details and find that time with the goalie coach, because you don't have that extra 20 minutes before or after practice. You need that rest because you got to play again two nights later or the next night. So, and I think that's, you see that in Mikko too. Like, when he's not having to play too much, he'll come in and give you a really sharp performance, and that's because of the work. When you don't have time to do that work and the details slip, like, that's where, I don't know what else a goalie coach does. Like, at some point you have to find a way to balance that as a goaltender. Like, you can't be reliant on all these sessions all the time. Eventually the changes have to become innate. I don't think that's on the coach as much as it's on the goalie himself.
Well, you touched on the UC Saros situation, and I got the solution for you. It's call up Connor Ingram and put him as the backup. But that might be a little bit of personal preference, Kevin. Hey, I mean, that's an unreal breakdown on the Oilers. I got a couple of rapid-fire ones for you, though. And I just, you know, you can rank their season out of, you know, 0 through 10. You can give me a quick thought on it, but I just want a couple. And let's start with Saros. What do you think of his season so far? How successful has it been compared to the rest of his career? Because it seems like he's taken another step forward here.
Well, it started last year, kind of about halfway through the season, where he really grabbed the reins from Pekka. And, you know, Pekka, I talked to him for almost an hour last week, too. You know, as his jersey retirement ceremony is coming up here. And we talked a little bit about UC and about the decision to retire and how much of that was sort of seeing that UC was ready, that he didn't need, you know, big brother or as people joked, his dad there in a mentorship role anymore. He was ready to be the number one. And Pekka took a lot of pride in that too, in the role he played and sort of helping with that transition. He always knew it was coming. As soon as he saw UC from the first time, he knew it was coming. So, and I just shows you the kind of person Pekka is actually, that rather than seeing it as competition, he embraced it from a mentorship standpoint. And when it was time to step aside, he did. Saros has just kind of picked the ball up and gone with it. He's in the Vezina conversation in my mind. He's near the top of it. He's passed in this past weekend. He's actually passed Igor Shesterkin on the goals saved above expected chart from Clearside Analytics, which to me offers your best sort of measurement of goalie performance relative to shot quality that's out there. Again, a lot of that is workload based, like Igor Shesterkin on a per shot basis. Nobody touches him in the National Hockey League right now. I guess Ville Husso in a small sample is up there, but you know, he's like 3.5% above expected save percentage, which is like uncharted water. Shesterkin's been that good, but I think you have to give credit. Like, on the flip side, UC may have passed him based on volume, but it's volume and being excellent. Like, you know, second or third to Shesterkin on the per save basis performance. And he's doing it while playing the most minutes and seeing the most shots of anyone in the NHL. Like, to my mind, it is probably Vasilevsky, Shesterkin, and Saros for the Vezina right now. And I'd be tempted, my vote was always Shesterkin to this point, but that needle's starting to trend towards UC Saros. And that should tell you all you need to know, right? Like, here's a 5'11" goalie in his first year as a unquestioned starter, and he's performing at that level. You know, if we're doing ratings, it's 11 out of 10 for me.
You know what? I got to watch Saros the other night, and I was talking with someone within the Oilers organization, and they gave him very high credits where they said he's almost a combination of Jonathan Quick and Mika Kiprusoff. Like, that's just how good, you know, he's been this season, but also just how he's adapted his game. I mean, he moves incredibly smooth. It's butter out there to him. It's way too easy. And so, yeah, I mean, and he hit the, you know, he went over Shesterkin as well. And Kevin, I know I've taken so much of your time, but I got one more question. And that's just Jacob Markstrom. How much of his success do you think is personal doing this season versus the Calgary Flames playing, you know, a near perfect system under Daryl Sutter?
Well, this is an interesting one for me. And I will say on Saros too, like, the comparisons are interesting, but to me, what separates Saros is his edge work, his skating. Like, he learned how to battle from Pekka, but what separates him, because there wasn't enough of that game when he first arrived, everything needed to be perfect. And so sometimes you got to go outside the butterfly box. But what separates Saros is his skating, his edge work, and his patience on the edges. He never commits too early. And it makes him, in a league that is becoming increasingly dynamic offensively with players who are really good at showing one thing and delivering another, like straight shots, you know, a lot of guys have deception in their release. Like Saros is sort of, you know, as Pekka told me last week, he's sort of fake resistant because of his patience.
But isn't that almost like Jonathan Quick in his prime? Like, I remember that series against the Devils, and I feel like it was game two or game three where Kovalchuk had like 12 shots on goal, and Quick was just, he was able to follow him, he would track him, and at the time, I mean, Kovalchuk was one of the best shooters in the world. Like, that's kind of where I fully get the comparisons.
Yeah, I think Jonathan Quick in his prime was more aggressive.
That's true.
There were save selections that he made that looked different than everybody else. So they looked dynamic and athletic and reactionary, but they were actually just a different form of block. Like Jonathan Quick had a one pad down blocking formation that nobody recognized as a block. And because of his quickness and his speed, he was able to get into positions to make those saves more aggressively than anyone else. Like he's an elite. And in addition to being exceptionally quick, Quickie is also an elite game reader as well. So he get there and he take more ice. Like whereas Saros is, gets there, gets to the edge, doesn't, like, there's way less scramble in Saros's game, in my opinion. He gets there, yeah. He gets to the edge, and he just holds edges. Like, he's not even that aggressive at 5'11". So, but interesting comparisons nonetheless. As far as, Markstrom, you know, everybody points to the system. And sure, Dan Vladar having some shutouts of his own early in the year sort of made people wonder, okay, it must be the system. But to be honest with you, like, we look at Shesterkin and we think, oh my God, the Rangers are just Igor Shesterkin. Like they leave him hanging out to dry and he basically carries them. Jacob Markstrom's expected save percentage is .891. Igor Shesterkin's expected save percentage is .891. So the volume isn't there for Calgary. Like, you know, their expected goals, like they're in the top, they're better than Toronto in terms of defensive metrics, expected goals against on high danger chances against, like Calgary is way up there because they don't give up a ton of chances. But the ones they do are actually can be quite difficult. And so I'm not sure that Markstrom is getting enough credit just because I think people look at that and say, oh, Daryl Sutter, it's easy. You know, sometimes it's harder. It's an adjustment. You're not seeing the volume of easy shots. Like they don't give up easy shots. So you don't get to sort of feed your game and how you're feeling that night by stopping a bunch of 99 percenters that let you feel good. When you do see shots there, even though you see less, it tends to be better quality ones. And so his adjusted save percentage, you know, amongst guys who have seen at least, you know, say 300 shots. So we're into the number one goalies. You know, he's six in the NHL. So he's right in that conversation at plus 2.1% with, you know, not far behind UC Saros, not far behind Andrei Vasilevskiy, ahead of Freddie Anderson and Thatcher Demko and Tristan Jarry by a couple of points, guys that we consider to be, you know, knocking on the door of Vezina Trophy consideration. And his expected save percentage, you know, is significantly lower than say a Frederick Anderson in Carolina. So, I know the temptation is to just say it's all about the system. And certainly there are times where that system helps, but they are still a team that will give up chances and put their goalie in tough situations. And Jacob has been exceptional there behind that.
And no Vancouver bias there, eh, Kevin? No.
No.
I'll give you a hard time.
I pulled up the ClearSight analytics. And so, you know, like I'm looking like he's at first, I'm like, he's ninth or 10th right there with Freddie Anderson, Thatcher Demko. There's your 9, 10, 11. But, you know, I hadn't sorted for chance. Like Spencer Martin's on that list with only 100 chances. Craig Anderson's on that list with less than 200. Pavel Francouz has made his way up that list. Keep an eye on that in Colorado, but not enough chances to sort of qualify as a starter. When you filter it for sort of starters, you know, you're in that. That there's sort of this group. There's Shesterkin, Vasilevskiy, and Saros. That's your top. That's your Vezina Trophy winners. And frankly, Billy Huso's up there too, just in a much smaller sample. If he can keep it up, which is always difficult, he enters this conversation. But then that second tier that's right behind them, like that's Markstrom, Demko, Anderson, Jarry, Sorokin. You know, even Jordan Binnington, who a lot of people are all over, is still in that conversation. And I think, you know, like that's pure statistics. So I think a lot of people, again, we don't get a chance to those environmental discussions, the narratives that surround them. We don't get a chance to really look at numbers that break them down like the ClearSight stuff does. And again, it's one of those ones like, again, Dan Vladar plays on the same team. He's got all these shutouts. So he must be, it must be a product of the system because he's got really good numbers and we don't know who he is. So that sort of hurts Jacob Markstrom's argument, right? Like that's what I heard early in the season. Well, if Markstrom's got an 891 expected and Dan Vladar has a 904, like that's a 13-point difference just on expected save percentage. And when we were looking at New York, like Shesterkin was at 894 and, you know, for the longest time, Georgiev was down near the bottom. Like, so he was getting all those sort of crap sandwich starts. And so his numbers were, yeah, they were worse. And so that makes Igor look good, but in comparison, but the reality is you couldn't compare the environments of Dan Vladar and Alexander Georgiev. They weren't the same. And that's where these numbers sort of matter to sort of weigh that out. It's also where these numbers matter when teams are considering, you know, in small sample sizes, is this guy ready for the NHL? A number of guys that right out of the sort of out of college, out of junior, out of wherever that had a lot of success last year, did it behind teams that really supported them defensively. Like they had incredibly high expected save percentages. And you knew some teams are going to look at that and be like, oh, this guy's ready. Like Pencilman is the backup. But you also knew that as he saw more games and was there more regularly, like the team's not able to play at that level. Like, hey, let's make sure we don't hang out this kid, hang him out to dry tonight. Well, that's different if he's coming up late in the season for five games versus playing all season behind the team. The expected save percentage is going to normalize. And, you know, if their performance was based on an easy environment before, it's going to come down as well.
It's a great breakdown, Kevin. I love how you're human like the rest of us, so we don't know if it's Georgiev or Georgiev yet, and I don't think we ever will find a perfect pronunciation on him. But man, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you breaking down the goalies. You're one of the best, and I hope everyone goes and checks out your work at In Goal Magazine, the podcast, the articles. They're all incredible.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
The moment we've all been waiting for since September is finally here. In honor of the big game, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 56, is giving new customers 56-1 odds on either team. Bet just $5 and win $280 in free bets if your team wins. DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in New York, meaning you can bet from almost a third of the country. If the sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, play DraftKings Daily Fantasy Football Contest for Super Bowl 56. New customers can get a free shot at $1 million in top prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app, use promo code THPN, and get 56-1 odds on either team. Bet just $5 and get $280 in free bets if your team wins. That's promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 56. 21 plus, minimum age and location requirements vary by jurisdiction. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full list of requirements and state-specific responsible gambling resources. Void where prohibited. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Tennessee, call or text the TN Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. In Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat. In New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY.
Take your game to the next level with Pro Rock Hockey Sticks. Pro Rock is changing the way we buy top-of-the-line twigs. They're lightweight, balanced, and provide the perfect kick point, whether you're a pro hockey player or a beer league legend. Pro Rock Hockey Sticks are made for you. They're at a price point you can't beat, so check them out today at ProRock.com. Play like a Pro Rock.
Huge thanks to Kevin Woodley for taking the time from In Goal Magazine today. And now, the main event. The Women's Hockey Tournament at the 2022 Beijing Olympics. We've got Rod Black, a voice I know you've heard, talking hockey. He's joining the show right now. Rod, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's
It's hockey weather here in Ontario right now. It's coming down. We got a winter storm. So, you know, and the Olympics are here, which I think has really crept up on a lot of people, although we're in the middle of a pandemic. And I think a lot of people are going, what? The Olympics start this week. In fact, the games start before the games. Let the games before the game begin, because the Canadian women's team right up against it against Switzerland later today.
I'll never understand that, how the opening ceremonies happen after some of the games. Like, I think there's curling even earlier today. But again, that's I'm not the one going to be scheduling the Olympics. That seems like one of the worst jobs in the world.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think that the games have to stay within the games. But it goes to show you how first of all, how big the games are, both the Summer and Winter Olympics, with so many sports, so many games, so much to cover. And secondly, I just think it's also the new world we're in with the COVID protocols. And, you know, I do think that the testing and the possibility of someone testing positive during the games also throws a lot of the competition for a bit of a loop. So my personal feeling is I'd like to see the games begin after the opening ceremony, because then it kind of sullies the tradition, the ceremony. But hey, having said that, Marie-Philippe Poulin is the captain for Team Canada. She gets to play a game, and then in a couple of days, she will carry the flag for Canada along with Charles Hamelin at the opening ceremony. So I'm sure a big kick for her, obviously just a great honor. She must be proud, and I know Canadians are proud of her.
Well, that was actually my first question for you, and you kind of beat me to it. But is Marie-Philippe Poulin one of the biggest household names in Canada right now going to the Olympics? Or is that mainly just because, you know, we're hockey-centric minds here?
No, I think it is. I think she is. I think that, you know, going in, I just think that because of everything else that's gone on and the kind of the mystery that surrounded these games and the concern, and I do think that not having the dream teamers there, not having the NHL players there, and with all due respect to the men that are playing there, including Eric Staal and Owen Power and the rest, I just think that, like Pyeongchang, where the dream teamers weren't there, the women do take more of the spotlight this time. Having said that as well, I just think Marie-Philippe Poulin has become a household name and with what she's done. And, you know, a few months ago, she scored the game winner in Calgary. She scored, you know, game winners and tires and huge goals in previous Olympics. She is, you know, think about, she was a starlet a few years, you know, just, you know, this young player that was like a rocket ship. And now she's the biggest name, and she is Captain Canada for the women. And I have no issue with her being that person to carry the flag. In fact, I'm surprised that, you know, she didn't carry the flag a little bit earlier. But I know one thing, this is a young lady who carries her country's colors well. She's so proud to be Canadian. She's the biggest name. I think she's the best hockey player in the world right now. She's risen to that, but it still doesn't assure Canada a gold medal by any stretch.
Well, it is National Girls and Women's in Sports Day, so it just makes sense that the ladies are taking center stage. And I 100% agree with you. I think the women's stage.
I should have known that, and I'm glad they did. Maybe, okay, so I take back everything I said about them playing today. Maybe they should have the opening ceremony today.
There you go.
And for the women's team. But I have a teenage daughter, and I have teenage sons, and I will tell you that it says a lot. It speaks volumes when, you know, even the young boys are wearing the female jerseys and the young girls are wearing the male jerseys. We don't have to worry about all of that. When you have a star and you have a hero like an MPP or like an Owen Power or Eric Staal, you can wear their colors and you can wear their names on your back. I'm really happy for her. I've got to know Marie-Philippe Poulin through the years covering her. I've had the privilege of covering this team for many years, over a decade, and I would love to be there in Beijing calling these games, but I'll be watching like the rest of our country.
Well, end of the day, hockey is hockey, and I think that there's you know, that for all the criticism the Olympics may get, they also do some of the best jobs at spotlighting, you know, the best on best talent that they get, especially when it comes down to that gold medal game. I mean, there's very few hockey matchups I would rather watch than Canada, USA, and women's hockey. But Ron, is there any specific player or players that you were looking forward to? Maybe someone you've seen at Worlds that you were like, wow, this player surprised me. Like, she's got game. Is there one or two players on your mind that you can think of?
Yeah, beyond the obvious ones. I mean, again, you know, for Team USA, you look at the big line, although Hillary Knight's going to, I still think they'll keep that line somehow together, especially on power plays, Kendall Coyne Schofield and Brianna Decker. I would put Marie-Philippe Poulin as the best player in the world. I put Brianna Decker close behind, Hillary Knight close behind. Natalie Spooner still plays with great power, and she's got great, she is a goal scorer for Team Canada. But I honestly, this is the Olympics where we've seen the changing of the guard, and we've said it for Canadian players for a long time. I will tell you, based on what I watched over the last decade, Team USA was a better team. They won more world championships. Yes, they won in Olympic Games in Pyeongchang. They didn't win in Sochi. But I just thought they were faster. I thought they were more powerful. They were more skilled. And that's nothing to take away from the Canadian team. But I just thought the Canadian team also stayed pat for too long. And we've seen this injection of youth. Sarah Filliet is someone, rewind this tape, Sarah Filliet, and rewind it probably in 10 years, Sarah Filliet is going to become the next Marie-Philippe Poulin in my mind. She has got everything that MPP had 12 years ago or 10 years ago when she started to become that name, more recognized name. She's going to be that player. She's got it all. She has both ends of the ice. She's highly gifted. She's got great puck skills. She's fast, great vision, and she plays the game. She passes the eye test. Forget all the analytics. Sarah Filliet is going to be one of those players. Then you look like at, you know, some of the back end players for Team Canada that we're going to start talking a little bit more about. Renata Fast has risen into one of the best defenders in the world, best blue liners in the world. But look out for Ashton Bell and you know, Aaron Shelton and others. And Micah Zandi-Hart, who did not play for Team Canada at the last World Championships. We're starting to see the young, fresh players, those names that are going to become household names, including for Team USA. Abby Rock, who did not have a great World Championship by any stretch. But I have a feeling you're going to hear more about her, and Grace Sumwinkle. And I say Canada and the United States names, and, you know, let's not forget some of the others. Canada will play against Alina Mueller tonight, who had a terrible injury at the World Championship. She's back. But I know that it's still going to come down to Canada, United States in the final. And don't be surprised if it goes to overtime. Again, there's so little between these two teams. There has been, especially in big games. You know, Canada and the United States have the best female hockey players in the world. There is no doubt. And it's just great to see some of those young names. But I have a feeling we're going to be saying that name, Sarah Filliet, a lot more. And I know that's a lot of hype and that's a lot of expectation. But believe me, she's that good. She's the real deal.
It's crazy to think that she was only born in 2000 as well. Like, she was 2 years old when Canada was winning gold in Salt Lake City. It's just insane to think about. Okay, Rod, I got one last one for you. And that's, if you're the coach, who are you starting in net? You know, when it comes down to the meaningful games, I get it, they'll probably rotate here. Are you going with Debian or are you going with Mashmeyer?
I think you go with Anne-Renee Debian, and then you let her, you know, it's her job to lose, and she doesn't want to lose it by any stretch. Emerence Mashmeyer is a game or two. There's so little between those two. I go back to the World Championship, and I said the same thing, and my analyst, Cheryl Pounder, both of us, and we've watched through the years, you know, with Genevieve Lacasse, who had to play, and, hey, this is the first time no Shannon Zabados at the Olympic Games. So there's a lot of pressure. What I do like is that Canada can kind of build into this. Again, the game against the United States in the round robin is going to be a litmus test and a barometer moving forward. And perhaps this is what Troy Ryan is thinking. He's probably thinking, you know, it's a competition. May the best woman win. And I do think it's Anne-Renee Debian who will get the start first. They'll play some Mashmeyer. Obviously injuries, obviously I hate to say it, COVID could play into this whole thing.
the United States has the same thing going with Matty Rooney and Nicole Hensley and Alex Cavallini, Alex Rigsby, who's been there. They have the more veteran group of goaltenders. And it could come down to goaltending once again. But finally, Canada has to make that step instead of relying on some of those veteran players that, you know, and unfortunately for these women, and it's a sad thing that we're not talking about, you know, the pro game. There should be, and let's hope beyond this, that we come to a conclusion that there is a one league and we have the best on the best, and maybe the National Hockey League gets involved so that we're not talking about these players every 4 years or every year at the World Championship. They deserve better. They're that talented. But I do think it's Anne-Renée Desbien who will get the call in, you know, for Team Canada. And don't be surprised. It's a 1-2 race between Desbien and Emerence Mashmeyer, and may the best woman win it. And when it comes down to that gold medal game, and I hate to put, you know, that cart before the gold medal horse, but it's likely going to be Canada and the United States again. You want your best goaltender in who's riding best at that time. And we'll see what happens. Could there be an upset? Maybe. You know, the Finns are really good. Could there be an upset of the United States or Canada? That could happen. But I really do not see anything but Canada and the United States on a collision course once again. And some people, by the way, say, oh, you know, it's too top heavy. You know, Canada. Guess what? Yes, the rest of the world is catching up, but Canada and the United States are still the powerhouses. And they will be. And they will be for quite some time until the rest of the world catches up. In my mind, who cares? They're awesome to watch. They're awesome to call. They're awesome to cover. And they're always awesome, close games that generally goes to overtime or a shootout. So that's my prediction. Probably another overtime in the gold medal game.
Rod, this has been a pleasure. Hey, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little pissed. I don't get to hear you calling the games, but I hope you get to enjoy watching them at home. Thank you again for everything. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say go Canada, go, but go Olympians, go. It's just, I will tell you, in the middle of winter, in the middle of a pandemic, it is so nice to be having something to talk about in that sports. And here's the other one. Quickly, I know you got to go. It's so cool that young kids get an opportunity to look up to these Olympians and someday dream the Olympic dream. That's how it starts. That's how it started for Fillier, for Poulin, for Hillary Knight, for Decker. They all watch the games. That's why we watch. Someday, 10 years down the road, they'll be talking about Beijing and how they were inspired by these great players.
Love it. Rod, you're the best. Thank you again.
Cheers. Have a great one. Enjoy the games.
Rod Black right there talking Team Canada, Team USA, and the 2022 Olympic Games in Beijing. That's going to do it for me. Don't forget, 9:10 tonight, 11:10 if you're out east, Canada taking on Switzerland. The women's tournament starts. Also, you got Oilers Capitals tonight, if that tickles your fancy as well. Huge thanks to Kevin Woodley for hopping on the show. Jeff Beck at the 12-ounce sports studios. Isha Jeromey, Dylan Kaiser, the whole team at the Hockey Podcast Network. Be sure to use DraftKings criminal code THPN. Until next week, everyone, be kind, be better.